told whiskey for years. I mean, for years and years.
It must have been good stuff.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
Welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder, and I will be your host tonight. They can't get anybody else to do it. It's the only reason I'm here. Anybody that wants this job can come and get it. The pay.
You saying take this job and shove it?
The pay is just not as good as everybody makes you think it is. It's
liquid
not what it's
pay. Isn't that liquid pay?
It's liquid pay. It's liquid pay. Yep, it is. So welcome, folks, to tonight's Goat Rodeo. We've got a full herd of goats here for you tonight. We've got Coastal Jack Walker's back in the house. Tim Leeming's back in the house. Cody's not here yet, but he just texted me, said he'd be here a little bit later. The Bopper is here, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina, the home of Bobby's Auto Parts and Endless Warranty. And Hewlin Oval Crash is here, the splitter, and the one, the only. He's here. Folks, I don't know what else to tell you. It's going to be big. It's going to be big. So let's get right into it and get around and say hello to everybody. Hello, Tim. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Jeff. And sounds like y'all are. Of course, we've had 15 minutes to talk. I listened to the archive of last week's show. Y'all had a tremendous discussion. It was very informative, entertaining. It was great. I just don't see why you had to let that Patrick Reynolds shark home.
I knew that was coming.
He listened to see if what we said about him. That's why he listened.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to hear it. You know, it was good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Y'all can say anything you want about me. It doesn't. You can ask my friend Zach about that. It doesn't matter.
But if we're nice to Patrick, it does, though, right?
You can be nice to him. I don't have to be.
Oh, that's cool, buddy. You got a legendorial for us tonight. What's it about?
I do have one for you tonight. You know, I got to look at the title. What are Talladega Days?
Oh, cool.
Instead of Talladega Nights.
All right, that's cool, man. I like that. Yeah, he's current.
Yeah, we'll see.
Coastal Jack Walker's back with us tonight, one-eyed as he can be, but he is. How you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good. Glad to be back in the studio.
Got that dot fingerprint thing, whatever
it is.
Yeah,
man, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we won't get into that.
Yes, let's don't.
You got
my eyes hurt to think about it.
You got a historic race finish for us tonight,
man.
Where are we going?
We're going to Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, I like Nashville,
those
man.
Nashville cats.
I like Nashville. Nashville's a good place.
Yeah. Some news coming out of Nashville today, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of news?
On the old fairground.
Oh.
Oh, that's good.
We might get to talk about that.
Yeah, let's throw that in there.
Yeah, it's a racing show.
Is that in your segment, Bopper?
Well, it could be. Well, I have an evolving segment. I have several bullets.
You're still putting it together, right?
Several bullets we could approach, you know, consider.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, good to be here. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. The man on the street is here playing with his phone. I guess that's what he's doing.
I'm trying to turn it off.
His hands are under the table. I'm assuming it's his phone.
I'm trying to turn it off,
you know,
so it doesn't ring while we're on the air.
So what are you doing tonight, Hewlin? I saw that you have a 3/4 page typewritten with a 24-point font.
Well, I gotta have it that big to see it.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
See,
what's the subject, you?
Get over to your mic, will you?
Talladega, for lack of a better. Actually, it's a little bit of ramblings about NASCAR, Talladega, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. History.
All right. Yeah, cool. Let's get things started off. Who wants to go first? Hold up your hand.
I'll go.
All right. Go. Oh, you're going to read your segment. Cool. All right, that's good. We'll get that out of the way.
Well, you want to do that? You want to do that or just talk around?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's hear what you got. We might talk about it.
Well, that's one reason I want to go first.
And then you don't want Tim to steal your thunder.
Ah, you got it.
Yep. Cool. All right.
All right. Well, it's Tuesday again. We just had another restrictor plate race as usual, the big one. Talladega has always given the race fans some surprises. Bad pavement, Richard Brickhouse win. As other first-time winners, Stenhouse is the most recent first-time winner. Over the years, the Cup trip to this super speedway has produced some very fast speeds, some notable wins, some spectacular crashes, and some of the biggest big ones at any NASCAR track. This year, the most notable thing was the crowd. I, for one, was quite surprised to see the size of the crowd. Must be Junior Nation. But whatever the reason, I was pleased to see the stands pretty much full after such a miserable showing in the stands in previous races. And the apparent size in the TV audience. Of course, Bobby just burst that bubble. He says that we had a miserable TV audience rating, but whatever. Maybe, just maybe, NASCAR isn't quite dead yet. Now, if we can just figure out what it was that filled the stands last Sunday and bottle it and sell it to NASCAR to fill the stands for the rest of the races this year and beyond. I, for one, hope we have witnessed a turnaround in fan appeal for NASCAR. Guess we will just have to wait and see if the Talladega phenomena holds or was just a flash in the pan. After all, this is one of the Earnhardt strongholds. Fingers crossed.
So there's a lot that you said there that I want to start off with. One, you said if we could bottle it, we could sell it back to NASCAR. Brian France would just peddle it off and trade it for something else.
Well, he might, but we could get rich off of it, maybe.
If it was any good. But the other thing that you said was that you said maybe NASCAR isn't dead. Whoever said they were, man, you didn't hear that on this show.
I did. There's a lot of people think it's maybe not completely dead, but dying quickly. Huh. I see Jack over there grinning.
I don't know if it's dying or not. There's a lot of people in the stands at Talladega.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's good to hear, man.
That was absolutely astounding to me that there were that many people in the stands.
They sort of released the figures for this race at 192,000.
Of course.
There's no possible way it could be 192,000. They don't have that many seats.
Well, okay. It wasn't 192,000, folks.
But it was close.
I just read that, but that's not it. So,
well,
all right.
They might have had 192,000 seats 20 years ago.
This is a non-discussion.
Well, they once had Max Frederick grandstands there, did they not?
I think they did. I'm not sure, though. Did they?
What?
Back.
I have to ask you.
Straightaway grandstand?
Yes, they did.
But it wasn't huge, I don't think.
No. It was. The track is so big, it's hard to put stands all the way around that.
I went to Talladega twice, and they definitely did not when I was going.
No, me neither. But then that was in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. But there's no way that they had 192,000 fans.
Well, it doesn't matter how many they had. The stands were full.
It was 191,000.
And Patrick will shoot me for this, but Danica Patrick's boyfriend won the race.
Yeah.
Danica finally made it.
Tim May also.
You know, something happened at Talladega that's never happened in Cup racing.
What was that?
Two competitors kissed in victory lane.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird, wasn't it?
As far as we know.
At one point, I thought she was just going to crawl in the car with him. There was more of her in the car than out.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
She could have done it. I mean, what's the big deal?
That's weird. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
So I didn't watch it. Somebody, Bopper, Take the lead on that. What happened out there, man?
Well, I thought that the TV numbers would be up because there was such a buzz, you know, surrounding everything. The crowd obviously was good. Whatever the number was, it looked full. But the numbers were the lowest since 1998. The TV ratings.
So
two NBA games in the Kentucky Derby, both.
Yeah, I'm really surprised.
Finished in front of it.
I'm surprised.
Hey, the Kentucky Derby. If you want to know what a good number is, try a 10.5.
Holy cow! You know why they have such good numbers there, though, right? Don't you? It's because they don't know how to do the digital thing that NASCAR's got figured out.
Hey, I watched the Kentucky Derby this time.
Did you really?
I mean, I didn't know what I was watching. I was thinking, man, you could get out there with a late bottle on that.
I always like a good mud race, man. A good mud race is good.
You know? That would have been really a sloppy track.
And you know,
late bottle on.
Okay. Well, we're getting off subject on the Kentucky Derby, but I thought this is really, really high class. There's no commercialism. They call that, that's called Corinthianism, when you do something for the sport, just for the sake of the sport. There's nobody saying, well, this here Geico new insurance Kentucky Derby brought to you by STP. You know, nobody.
It's like
says
our
that.
Programming right here. Yeah. Yeah. On this channel.
Just, yeah, we do it for the sake of the sport.
I didn't know that it was Corinthianism.
That is a Corinthian sport when it is not. And it is night and day from NASCAR. I mean, there's no commercial. There's no nothing. It's just. But there was one fly in the ointment, and this really looked tacky. Dodge, whoever owns you now, on some of the buildings, which I was probably stables and stuff, in the back, off the back stretch, there's a series of these buildings that had green roofs. On about two of them, in big tacky letters, it said Ram trucks are tough, or some kind of something like, in the middle of this perfect example of Corinthianism. Here is buy a Dodge,
and they spent a fortune for that.
And they spent, but I'm surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised that they would let them do
too.
That at any price.
Yeah, that kind of spoils the Corinthians.
It really did. It was really, it was really disappointing to see an advertisement,
which shows you that even the Kentucky Derby is for sale.
and needing money.
Yeah. But
well, wanting money.
If you want to see how commercialism, how commercialized NASCAR is, watch the Kentucky Derby, which is the other end of that spectrum.
Yeah,
I mean, it's except for that one stable with a Dodge sign on it. So next year probably have Toyota too on there, and then Geico.
Oh yeah, then it's just billboarded up.
Yeah, it's just billboarded up.
Huh. So like, okay, like 3 and 4 in Atlanta.
So. Back to Talladega, as they say down there. Y'all know that's how they say it, right?
Talladega.
Yep. I did a segment on that. Dustin and I went down there. We went to restaurants, stores. We went to the short track. We asked everybody, Talladega or Talladega? If you're from there, it's Talladega.
Yep.
It's Talladega if you're not. Yep. So, you know, that's like being from Myrtle Beach. If you say Horry County, we know you're not from Brown.
You're not from here.
That's right.
If there hadn't been a racetrack, nobody in the world would have ever heard the name Talladega.
No, have you ever been down there?
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
There's nothing.
There is nothing there.
Nothing.
I mean, no offense to the Talladega.
Well, that's a perfect place for a racetrack.
Well, yeah, it's an ideal place for a racetrack. Yeah. They just went out in the country and bought a tract of land, and you know that the county commissioners – welcomed them with open arms.
And that's a whole subject in itself right there, the politics of Talladega.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
We ain't even got time to
right.
Yeah. That'd be a good documentary to really bring to more light.
Yeah,
they would probably rub you out before they let you do a documentary on that. They're so crooked.
Actually, Talladega, before the track was even opened in 1969 at the beginning of the year, Ford Motor Company debuted the Torino Talladega. Remember that?
Yeah.
They named the car that, and the track hadn't got open yet. Because it didn't open until like September. And Ford run that body style the whole year. So that was the first inkling of the name Talladega.
Speaking of Ford, I think Ford has really stepped up their game this
apparently
year.
Apparently so.
Big time.
Apparently so. They have either funneled a whole bunch of money into it, or
it's
found
not
a
money,
trick.
Man. It's not money. It's
well, it's a numbers game. The reason they weren't winning is they didn't have the numbers. You know, they had the Penske cars, and you had two cars.
Yeah.
And now they bought Stewart Haas and so on and so forth. I mean, it's numbers. You got more chances. It's just like, you know, buying more tickets.
Not only more chances, they're very competitive this year.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
they were competitive, but they didn't have the numbers. You know, if Keselowski or Joey Logano couldn't win.
That was it. That was their only hope.
Yeah.
Two out of 40.
And Stewart Haas hadn't set the woods on fire, but they're up there. Yeah. I mean, they're going to, you know, be the
what do you got? Six, eight Fords? At least six.
The Harvick team admitted recently that they hadn't figured out the body nuances. That they had the Chevrolet body really down pat and mapped out aerodynamically, but they don't, they're not up to speed on the forward body yet. So
I would imagine that it takes many, many hours in the wind tunnel to...
Nah.
Don't think so? Why not?
Just add some Bondo here and there.
Yeah, but that adds weight, and then you can't meet the laser specifications.
So, all right.
So who really caused the crowds at Talladega? Was it? Do y'all think it was the Junior effect?
I do.
I do.
Has to be.
Totally.
What? Has
totally.
To be.
What else would draw
why
them?
Why did it not affect the TV?
Can't
good question.
That's an anomaly.
Well, my opinion of that is that it didn't affect the TV because Junior Nation goes to the races. They don't watch them on TV. They go to the races. Especially at Talladega.
They hadn't been going.
Hadn't been going to the races.
Yeah.
They
well,
hadn't
yeah,
been
but
going.
But they know that their hero is fixing to retire, and they don't want to miss a race from now out.
No, but I think, you know, the end result of what comes up when they get to Charlotte or when they get to Kansas or wherever they go next is going to be now that Junior, quote-unquote, let them down at Talladega, which is his track. Are they going to keep throwing money to come to Kansas or come to Charlotte or whatever and see what the grandstand crowds will look like at those events? That's what I'm judging.
I think they will, just because they don't want to miss one of Junior's last races.
Yeah.
Maybe not all of them. But
this is the last time that Junior will run in the spring race where two competitors kiss in victory lane.
There you go. There's some history.
Oh, that's for sure.
Well, now, some history. Alex begs to differ with you. Patty Boyce and Elton Sawyer.
They're not cup drivers.
No, but they're...
I said cup drivers.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you want to go back even farther than that, go back to 1972 or 73 when Richard Petty won at Daytona in the STP car and Andy Granatelli kissed him on the cheek.
Yeah, but they Andy Granatelli, he was not a driver, a competitor.
Oh, well, that's true.
Okay, I'm hanging on to what I said.
All right, well, you just hang right on.
I think you had that well thought out.
I think I did well on that.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
I missed
it. It's kind of kinky sounding.
It is very kinky sounding. You'd think Michael Waltrip was in there.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds kind of kinky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like I said, far as we know.
Speaking of, did y'all see that thing that Danica run into on the backstretch?
Yeah.
Yes.
Same thing at Daytona.
It's an abutment that comes out, just juts out into protecting the gate or something.
Yeah, it's a kick out for the emergency vehicle gate.
If you saw it, that's good, because it probably will not be there next year.
Well, now who could not see that one coming?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, hell,
that's like that wall at Pocono.
Yeah.
Who was it hit that? Was it
Mark Barton,
Elliot. No, it was he used to drive for number one, Steve Park.
Somebody else hit it too. I can't remember. Seemed like it might have been Elliot Sadler. I don't know. I can't remember who it was. But somebody plowed that thing. And it's like you said, Bobby, how can you not know that that's going
to
get hit?
Now, some of this stuff, they say, well, we have to wait until a wreck happens before we can make a correction. No, you got to have enough sense to see.
Well, there's absolutely no reason for having that severe kick out.
There's
they can start at the end of the wall and blend it back into it easily. Easy.
How things have changed. Volunteer Speedway had the flagman stand that was in a precarious position for years. And I asked one night, why don't they move that thing? Well, they can't. Why? Because some guy flipped and hit it, knocked the flagman out, and killed him a few years ago. If they fix it, it'll show that they were negligent.
Okay.
I remember them knocking the flag stand down at Pullman Gray one night, and the only thing that saved the flagman was he saw it coming and literally jumped backwards out of the flag stand. And when the car hit the flag stand, it was almost like a cartoon. He was in midair.
Alex said it was Elliot Sadler that hit that wall.
Yep.
I thought it was.
Jeff Gordon hit it, too.
Steve Parks hit something, though. What was it?
Steve Park hit the end of pit wall at Atlanta. But
he had a tremendous wreck at Pocono.
Yeah, I remember a wreck at Pocono,
and Dale Jr. was involved in the wreck, in the Steve Park wreck. He kind of got collected in.
Yeah, the one you're talking about, Hugh, is when he just turned left that said he was trying to get the steering wheel on or something that came off, and he just turned left and went into the end of pit
right
wall.
Right into the end of pit wall.
I remember that.
That was.
But
bad.
I mean, I could not believe that abutment that Danica ran into. I mean, that was a shocker. Like, how is that there after all of this scrutiny of walls and this, that, and the other, and then here the most precarious track on the face of the earth. Cars going the fastest and everything, and here is a wall like that. I mean, hello. I mean,
it looked like from the camera that it was like a 90-degree.
I know. I don't think it was.
I don't think it was either.
It was not.
Because, the camera does funny
but
things.
But still, come on, y'all.
I know. I agree.
So Cody Densmore has joined us. Hello, Cody.
Mr. Cody.
Hello, Cody.
Cody, so why was there a crowd at Talladega? You haven't been listening to the show, have you?
I have not. I've been on a ringing phone call waiting on you guys.
Sorry about that, man. I wasn't looking up there. Yeah. But so we had a discussion about how come the crowd in the stands was so good at Talladega. Give us your standpoint.
I didn't get to watch the race too much. I just saw the highlight reel. I actually read yesterday that the TV ratings was the lowest it's been since 98. Even including a Monday race, it was even higher. Lower than a Monday race a few years back.
That's pretty bad there now.
Yeah, it is. So I'm not going to say because I don't know too much about the crowd. I just was able to see the last two laps of the finish, and that's all I saw.
It's been alleged here on this show, which is a Corinthianism type of show we've learned tonight, and we'll get into that later, that it was because Junior Nation's last ride may have caused it.
I wouldn't really think that just because he's retiring that they would automatically go out and see. But that kind of makes sense because that's his best chance to win a race is at Talladega.
Yeah, that's from that standpoint.
So, I mean, it very well could have been.
So if that's the case, then why did the TV ratings suck?
I don't know. That's a good question.
So we thought you'd know. I mean,
Well,
you're 18.
Quagmire.
You're 18 to 34.
Yeah, it's quagmire.
Yep.
I wish I did, but I reckon
they were all on the digital side looking at it. That's
well, I guess so. I'm part of that that target crowd, and if I can't answer it for you, so.
Well, the problem is, Junior Nations can't afford televisions.
I guess that's true, man.
But they can afford a ticket to Talladega.
Well,
televisions are cheap. You can get one at Walmart for $139. I bet those tickets were more than that.
You're probably right.
Okay, Coastal Jack Walker with Carolina Race Place Historic Race Finish from the carolinaraceplace.zoomshare.com, brought to you in part by Bobby's Auto Parts, the home of the Endless Warranty in Shaloke, North Carolina. Take it away.
All right. Tonight we are revisiting the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, 14th annual Southern 300 National Championship Late Model Sportsman Race.
Oh, good stuff.
October 1st, 1972. Ooh, if you remember, we did the 1971 probably 2 months ago, but this is the 1972 Southern 300. On Sunday, October 1st, 1972, the 14th annual Southern 300 NASCAR sanctioned late model sportsman race was held at Fairgrounds Speedway in Nashville, Tennessee. In 1970, a major update was made to the track to reconfigure it to a 5/8 mile paved oval with 36 degree banking. Permatex was also the title sponsor for the 1972 race. The race purse was $21,000. The two-day event started on Saturday with time trials. Charlie Binkley of Nashville, Tennessee, won the pole position. Binkley's lap was 18.37 seconds, which equated to 122.480 miles per hour. Starting on the outside front row was Alton Jones of Pleasant Grove, Alabama, with an identical lap speed as Binkley's. But Binkley made his run first. When the race started, Charlie Binkley took the lead, but on lap 22, he was passed by Darrell Waltrip, who started sixth. Waltrip set the pace and was still leading at the halfway break at lap 150. When the race returned to green, Waltrip was leading, followed by Jerry Long, Donnie Anthony, and Jack Ingram. On lap 190, Long began to slow and was passed by Jack Ingram to take over the second position. Waltrip was setting a blistering pace and on lap 229 passed Jack Ingram to put Ingram and the rest of the field one lap down. 12 laps later, as Waltrip was coming through the third turn, his front wheel came off, completely off, which I can't figure that one out, but it came completely off. Waltrip gained control and came in down into the pits. His pit crew was able to replace the wheel and get him back on the track in the third position on the lead lap. Jack Ingram leading with Charlie Binkley running second at the time. On lap 278, the caution flag came out for debris on the track. This closed up the field. When the restart came, everyone was on the gas going into the first turn. That's when Jerry Sisco's radiator blew a hose right in front of Red Farmer. Farmer couldn't see anything out his windshield, slowed, and was hit by Charlie Binkley. Binkley ricocheted off Farmer's car, hit the first turn wall, and went over the wall, demolishing his car. During the caution period, Farmer retired his damaged car and became the relief driver for L.D. Ottinger. Ottinger had been running in the sixth position. The last two caution flags really benefited Waltrip. On lap 282, he caught Jack Ingram and passed him in the second turn to retake the lead. The final caution flag came out on lap 299. Waltrip saw the flag, slowed, but Ingram stayed on the gas, passing Waltrip as the checkered flag waved. Ingram said he never saw the caution flag and declared himself the winner. Ingram attempted to file a protest, but NASCAR disallowed it. Darrell Waltrip was the winner, receiving $4,150 for the victory. There were 15,000 fans in attendance. So here's the way they finished. October 1st, 1972, the Southern 300 at Nashville. The winner, Darrell Waltrip, Owensboro, Kentucky, in a Chevelle, followed by Jack Ingram, Asheville, North Carolina, Chevelle, L.D. Ottinger, Newport, Tennessee, Chevelle, Jimmy Hensley, Martinsville, Virginia, Chevelle, Tony Bentonhausen, Jr., Houston, Texas, Chevelle, Wendell Webster, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle, Charlie Binkley, Hendersonville, North Carolina, Chevelle, Bill Morton, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle, Jim Berry, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle, Jerry Long, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle, Gene Payne, Owensboro, Kentucky, Chevelle, Bill Tutton, Hendersonville, North Carolina, Chevelle, Jones Farrell, Huntsville, Alabama, Chevelle, Joe Mangrum, Franklin, Tennessee, Chevelle, Jerry Sisco finished 15th from Nashville, Tennessee, also driving a Chevelle.
Your record stuck.
Yeah, I know. James Veach, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle. Benny Curley, Hindenite, North Carolina, Chevelle. Robert Wales, Pleasant Grove, Alabama, Chevelle. James Clymer, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Chevelle. Carl Lane, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle. Donnie Anthony, Fairfield, Alabama, Chevelle. Alton Jones, Pleasant Grove, Alabama, Chevelle. George Bone, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle. Jim Beller, Nashville, Tennessee, Chevelle. Clyde Peoples finished 25th. He's from Shelbyville, Tennessee, also driving a Chevelle. Chester Albright, Cedar Hill, Tennessee, Chevelle. And finished in the 27th position, Mr. Fluky Buford, Thompson Station, Tennessee, driving the first Ford.
You got any idea how the Chevelles did?
I think they did all right.
I think that was a precursor to the IROC series.
Yeah. Finishing 28th, continuing, Rob Stilling, Nashville, Tennessee, in the Chevelle. Red Farmer, Hughtown, Alabama, a Ford. Jackie Hooper, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in a Pontiac. Ronnie Dixon, Nashville, Tennessee, a Chevelle. Ray Chitwood, Lebanon, Tennessee, a Pontiac. Grant Acock, Chattanooga, Tennessee, a Chevelle.
The Adcock's Kirby.
Felix Treadway, Nashville, Tennessee, a Ford. Wayne Ashton, Fort Pierce, Florida, a Chevelle, and finishing 36th in the final position, Jimmy Smut Means, Huntsville, Alabama, in a Ford.
Six Fords out of the whole field.
That's the way they finished.
Or six other cars, yeah, not Fords, but
exactly.
Six.
Exactly. Chevelle was pretty popular about that time. But I can't figure out how Waltrip's wheel completely came off. How do you do that, Bobby?
Loose lug nuts.
Would it have to be all the lug nuts come off, or could the lug nuts go through the hub, or how do you do
wheels
it?
Wheels used to come off a lot back in the day.
You could pull the center out of the wheel.
But then they got him going, and being down, he was a lap ahead of the field at the time, so he lost that lap. Well, when he came back, he was in the lead. Still in the lead lap.
On the lead lap in third place.
So, I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah, if he pulled the center out of the wheel, it would have been easy enough for him just to run the lug nuts off and take the center off, put a new wheel on, and go back.
Wow. Anyway, that's the way she had it.
That's the way it was.
All right. This can be my segment. This dovetails into
dovetails.
I love dovetails, especially on a Corinthianism.
On a Corinthian show. Yeah, NASCAR, this is from the Tennessean, Jeff, and you probably know where that's. That's the Nashville newspaper.
Yep, that's the Tennessean. Nashville.
All right. This is an article from there. NASCAR in Nashville, ? Speedway operator eyes new day for track. Okay, I'll just read a little bit of it. Backed by three prominent Nashville businessmen with long ties to racing, promoter Tony Formosa is pushing Metro, and I'm assuming that's the authority that controls the fairgrounds, is pushing Metro to give him a long-term contract to operate the fairgrounds Speedway in Nashville, which he said will help return the facility to its former glory. Formosa has owned the contract to operate and promote races at the fairgrounds since 2010, but other than one two-year deal, he's been on a year-to-year basis ever since. He said the time is right for a long-term agreement, which would allow him to put money into upgrades and ramp up efforts to bring NASCAR-sanctioned races to Nashville. His plan comes with the endorsement of music mogul Scott Brochetta, who has co-owned professional racing teams for many years and is a former champion at the racetrack, along with NASCAR legend Darrell Waltrip and real estate executive Bill Freeman.
What's the date of this article?
Today.
Scott Brochetta was a race car driver?
According to this.
I did not know that.
Do you know Scott Brochetta?
Yeah.
Well, you learn things on this show, in case you haven't.
Always learn things on this show, man. That is cool.
Well, who knew Darrell Waltrip was a businessman?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a far-fetched statement right there. That's agenda journalism right there, man.
But Nashville's been going to close for years.
That's fake news right there, man. Fake news.
They was on the brink of, like, remember when
several times,
when Sterling Marlin and them was like leading parades in downtown that saved our speedway and all that. I mean, they were like on the chopping block.
Nashville Speedway, the Fairground Speedway, is a really interesting place.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Well, this article goes on to show, I mean, not to show, but to that to elaborate on the fact that all of this got caught up in a political turf war over the mayoral race and everything, and the speedway was sort of caught up in all that, but it benefited from whoever won the political situation was more of a friend to the speedway than the opponent was, so perhaps all of that is behind it. And this the gist of this article is, before any of this can happen, Mr. Formosa certainly wants to do it, but he's not going to do it without a long-term lease. You know, you can't. He's willing to, and he has backers, including these three.
Okay, let me throw something in. What does that tell you? If a short track operator wants a long term lease, he must smell something that short track racing is getting better.
Absolutely,
and I see that.
That's very astute. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Then he goes on to say he's had discussions with NASCAR, and they were very. Just very lukewarm, like they say we're in high demand everywhere. We might could come here.
They're also in denial.
Could come here with a lower tiered series, et cetera, et cetera. But the NASCAR response was much more low key than this article seems to indicate. They certainly didn't promise anything And if it was, it did sound like it was going to be, you know, the Cup Series that would eventually return. But that's at least interesting that Nashville is out of the off of death row, so to speak,
yep.
and there are people willing to do it if they can get a long term lease.
Jeff, you're entirely right about the NASCAR being in denial.
Oh, absolutely.
At least publicly, that they have a problem. Yeah. It's strange that they act that way when
to say they're in high demand everywhere and they take out seats and still can't put 50% of the people in the stands yep. is an idiotic remark.
Yeah.
They don't have any heroes anymore coming up.
So, Bobby, you're still in your article, right? I don't want to hijack your segment. But speaking of heroes, okay, Fox had on their early show, the Fox Family and Friends the other day, Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, old brain dead, the guy that's leading the points right now.
Kyle
Larson and Blaney. And I thought that was a really yep. good thing to do. You got these kids up there, and believe it or not, Kyle Larson's the oldest one in the group. You know?
That's saying something.
but okay, Bobby, back to your segment. But when you said there's no heroes yeah. anymore,
well, there's not.
I saw that and I thought, you know what, they need to do more of that
absolutely.
Kind of stuff. Yeah.
I saw a little thing on TV today with Kyle Larson. You remember the Pepsi thing that Jeff Gordon did, taking unsuspected people yeah. for a wild ride? They did something very similar to that with Kyle Larson driving. I saw it on Facebook or something today.
When Bobby finishes yeah. his segment, right. I'm going to say something about
okay,
it.
Okay, let me read this yeah. and then I'll quit.
Yeah. We like what you're doing. It fostered good comments, man.
Absolutely.
In a statement released through a spokesman, NASCAR acknowledged it has had discussions about bringing a lower-level series to Nashville. This is a quote. NASCAR has a long history in the Nashville area, and our fans there are as passionate as any place we race. The organization said in its statement, quote, NASCAR races are in demand, and we're pleased with our current lineup of racetracks. Many of the discussions related to racing in Nashville have centered around the popular regional and touring series events, end quote. So read into that what
Can
you will.
I don't believe that NASCAR is going to do anything much with the Cup Series different than what it's doing now.
Yeah.
But I think what they ought to do is do away with the Xfinity Series, do away with the Truck Series, make late model sportsman that runs regionally all over the country the second tier race, have some big national championship races. They might even have one at Daytona or Martinsville or whatever.
State championships.
Yeah, but, you know, have different things going on, accumulate points kind of like they used to do. That's where you make your heroes.
Yeah, you're right.
Your heroes
yeah.
are not made Amen. At the top. They're made at the bottom going to the top.
Yeah, absolutely yep. true.
And the Cups, the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, all that does is confuse things. Yeah. You got people with money coming in and that nobody's ever heard of. You got a race fan that wants to go to Talladega or somewhere that has all three series, can't afford to go to all three series. And a lot of places you got to buy a ticket for all three to get one.
Yep.
Yep.
So, I mean, it just screws everything up.
Minimum hotel yeah. stays and all that
yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
Just screws it up. You got to make heroes.
I like it. That's
and
good.
And the very best way to make them is on Saturday night.
Where was that written, Bobby? What paper was that in?
That is in the the Nashville, Tennessee.
In the Tennessee, and that was mm-hmm. in the Tennessee, and that was today. Well, and Scott Bruschetta is a freaking race car driver. I had no mm-hmm. idea.
Well, yeah, the Tennessean, but it also goes on to say USA Today Network, Tennessee. Maybe it's part of USA Today.
Huh.
But anyway, this is
a
current
very article.
Current article.
That's interesting. That's good. Like
remember when that roller coaster was beside the old yep. fairgrounds yep. track when yep. they used to race there? And
yep.
And it was banked like 46 degrees well, or something
they,
like
I mean,
that.
They've still had races there, you know, because they had a big CRA race there. I can't remember what the name of it was. The something other 300.
Well, Jeff, didn't you promote ago. A vintage race there one time?
No, it wasn't a vintage race. It was a racersreunion.com shootout. I had some Jeff Bodine won it. Him and Sterling Marlin battled for it. Harry Gant was in it. Jack Ingram was in it. DK Ulrich was in it. Let me keep thinking here. But it was one of those races. It was when we were trying to get the old school racing series going. And they raced the Grand National cars that Nashville was running then. And they're kind of a upper level street stock car, I guess is the best way to put it, you know. But that's what they raced in. And that was cool. But, yeah. Good place.
All right. Well, there's maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel.
I like hearing stuff like that. Scott Burchett is a freaking race car driver.
You can't get over that. I've never heard of the guy before.
I hadn't either. Yeah. He's a music mogul.
He is, yeah. All right, Tim. Legendorial time. Take it away, buddy.
Okay, here we go. May 9th, 2017, Legendorial entitled Talladega Days, not Talladega Night. Before I begin the Legendorial tonight, I want to express my sincere thanks to Alex Nickerson for filling in for me last week. I listened to the show, Alex, and you did an awesome job, even with your little bad lip part. But it was great. I had just finished watching the 2017 version of the Spring Cars Wreck Fest at Talladega. I admit it was great to see a huge crowd in the infield and the stands pretty close to full. I'm guessing that is due in large part to Junior Nation flocking there in droves to see him win, which was expected and which could have easily happened. Well, it didn't this time, so that ups the ante for the July Daytona event and the fall race at Dega. Of course, his fans are so disenchanted by now, they may not want to spend the money for another letdown. Watching that race brought back two specific Talladega memories, of which I have many. First up is the spring race of 1970. As most of you know, Richard Petty was driving a Ford in 1969, and the only races I attended that year were the two at Columbia and the Southern 500. Richard in a Ford was not my cup of tea. That's how we were back then. Oh, believe me, Richard and I had a serious discussion over that. As for my race team, we were looking forward to the start of the 70 season, and the white number 83 Plymouth was completed, washed, and waxed, and ready to go. So we took some time to head out to Talladega. I must admit the Talladega track looked much bigger than Daytona when we pulled in. 1970 was the year of the winged Mopars. Pete Hamilton had won the Daytona 500 in the Petty number 40, and we were pretty sure the two Petty Superbirds were going to reign supreme at Talladega. As it worked out, Buddy Baker in the Wayne Cotton Owens Dodge was the class of the field for most of the race, while Hamilton and Petty lay back. Eventually, Richard would have issues which relegated him to a 7th place finish, but when Buddy Baker cut a tire, which flew into his oil cooler causing a fire and having Buddy spin the car to put out the flames, Peter Goodwill Hamilton found himself in the lead. Pete was a full lap ahead with 13 to go, but he backed off for insurance, which allowed Bobby Isaac to get back on the same lap to finish second. I was hanging on to the fence at Victory Lane watching a very happy Hamilton celebrate his win. The following Thursday, we would be running our Plymouth at Columbia Speedway. When the Grand Nationals returned to the track in August, my season was already over as we had blown the engine in my Plymouth and would be working on a new one for the 1971 season. So we packed up and headed back to Talladega. The winged machines were out in full force, but this time, the Hamilton-Petty strategy would not be to pace themselves, but to run out front. They started 50 cars in that race, so we were expecting quite a competitive event. Instead, much to our joy, Pete Hamilton controlled the show. He led over 150 laps of the 188 and finished with an average speed of 158.517. I had to look that up, by the way, which was at the time the fastest 500-mile stock car race ever run. The race was only slowed by four caution flags, but those four caution flags took up 30 laps of the race. Three things stick out in my memory of that event. First, it was hot. It was very hot. Probably not as hot as Daytona was for some of the July events, but it was hot and the humidity was 105%. That's right, Alex. I said 105%. Second was a relatively small crowd. When I was looking up the average speed of the race, I noticed the official crowd estimate, ah, those were the days, was only 38,000. The third thing I remember is Maurice Petty, the chief, standing on pit road the last several laps with that blackboard on which he had chalk written, EASY. Whether or not Pete ever saw that blackboard is questionable, but he certainly wasn't taking it easy. He beat Bobby Isaac by 10 seconds for the win. Oh, there are many other Talladega stories in the memory banks of this old-time race fan, but I wanted to talk about the year the blue-winged Plymouth, driven by Pete Hamilton, would rule the track at Dega. Guess seeing Eric Almirola bring the number 43 home fourth today really got me going. Maybe one day I'll tell you all about the great ticket caper, or about pushing an out-of-gas Dave Marcus into victory lane, or about making the front page, picture and all, of the Talladega newspaper in a feature article, or maybe about the boogity dummy that tried to run me over headed to victory lane, so I rolled in hanging onto his roll bar while giving him my opinion of his driving skills. Got a free Winston cap and a bottle of free Gatorade out of that one. So many trips to Dega, so many memories. Now the race Sunday will be a good memory to add to the past. The 43 was fourth, and we had a first-time winner. And Danica finally made it to victory lane, albeit as a hanger-on. Back to you, Jeff.
All right. Cool.
Thank you.
Cool. You're welcome. Cody, what you got, boy?
All right. Well, I was going to talk about this last week, and I think we got off talking on the current topics, which I thought last week was a great show. But I wanted to talk about a revival of a ghost track. So I'll hijack Bobby's segment. And I don't think we've talked about it, so forgive me if we have already. I have a terrible memory. But the Middle Georgia Raceway, which I know, Jeff, you had a lot to do with the reunions and such, I saw this last week that they are, Ken Reagan is kind of spearheading a group to try and get a Legends car race down there. So they've been doing a little bit of cleanup here and there, and I saw a video where they had some Legends cars testing on the track. So I thought that was pretty exciting.
That is exciting, yeah.
Now, what would they do? Would they go down the pit road? If I remember, the pit road at Middle Georgia is kind of almost like a half a circle anyway.
Yeah, if I remember right, they were going to try to use a little, I believe it's a quarter mile track on the inside.
Yeah.
They used the front stretch and the pit lane coming to the infield. And apparently they were going to try and do something with the entire track itself. I'm not sure what. I know for a fact they'd have to put walls in, whether they're safer walls or not. I mean, I remember it's been how long, 5-6 years since the last event. You know, it's just, it's a big drop off if you go over the edge of the track there.
If you go down there on turn four, coming out of three and four, there's nothing there. It's a straight drop off down. And the other thing that they will have to do also is several places in the track, there are roots coming up through the asphalt. I mean, there's a lot of work need to be done on the surface and walls. And putting that wall up there at turn four, Cody, it's not going to be an easy thing. There's no foundation for it.
I wouldn't think so. There. Yeah. I didn't think it'd be easy. This was on, if you guys didn't see it, it was on Facebook. And if I can find the group name real quick, it was called Lost Speedways. And so basically, the pictures they show just in this post, there's still a lot of trees in the grandstands and brush and everything. The infield's cleaned up. The track's cleaned up. They brought in some, you know, equipment to take care of that. They really cleaned up the track surface itself. They painted the start-finish line and just really cleaned up, so it looks like a different track when you look at the last picture to the first picture.
I wonder if Tim Thornton still owns it.
It doesn't say who owns it. About a month prior to this, the Lost Speedway, which I believe Matthew Dillner has something to do with it, I think, who's with Speed 51. I could be wrong on that, but I think he had something to do with it at one time, whether he still does or not anymore. About a month ago, that same Facebook group put a series of pictures in a short video with Ken Reagan, and they were just walking around the track. They took some pictures. They had a short video with Ken telling his racing experiences there, and you know, it's a home track, and he said, you know, it would be an ultimate goal one day to bring the Legends cars down, and then about a month later they show they're already running on track as a test. So I'm really excited about it that they would choose to redo that track rather than open up a new one, especially for asphalt, you know, since we've only got one asphalt track in the state of Georgia that's besides Atlanta. So hopefully that's a step in the right direction, and you know, one day if they can ever get it in good working order again, maybe have a car race, you know, hopefully. One can only hope.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I hope they do that. The Reagan family had something to do with Watermelon Capital Speedway for a long time. Didn't Ken Reagan's father own it or something?
His brother.
His brother?
Okay. His brother Marvin owned it, and then he sold it, and about a year and a half, 2 years later, he passed away. I think he had cancer or something.
So they have, the family has been in the Speedway owning business.
Correct.
I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And in fact, Ken Reagan's father owned a modified car back in the 40s, the late 40s up through the early 50s. Mm-hmm. So the whole family has been involved in racing for quite some time. So, you know, I'm just hoping he's got some really good connections. Ken, if you didn't know, you know, he had a lot to do with Humpy Wheeler and the Legends car program in the late 90s. Kind of stepped away, and he's back operating the Legends cars series in Georgia. So currently they race at Atlanta Motor Speedway, that little bull ring like they do at all the Bruton Smith tracks. They, you know, they don't really have too many race tracks in Georgia to race at. I think they do the Cordeal, Watermelon Capital Speedway, and they've been up to our track, the road course I work at in Dawsonville, a few times. So, you know, he's really doing a good job as a promoter of trying to branch out the Legends car program in the state. So I'm just, you know, I'm looking forward to see what this Middle Georgia Raceway can accomplish again.
I just sent Tim a text to see if he still owns it. I'll let you know if I hear back from him.
Cool.
Well, that was about it for me. I just wanted to bring attention if, you know, certain people hadn't heard it or something. And
I saw that video that you're talking about where he was walking around the track with somebody. Yeah. And man, I was thinking how rough the track looked compared to how well we had it cleaned up when Tim was doing the reunions and things. They spent a lot of time, you know, on that thing. And I know it was Tim's goal to bring racing back there, you know. I mean, he – and I may be not be saying all the exact facts here, but it gives you the gist of the things – That property was part of a corporation that he was involved in, and it was slated for development, which would have destroyed the track. Same story we hear a lot. And when we found out about it, we invited Tim up to the Columbia Speedway to witness our event, to let him know what could happen down there. He bought into the idea and liked it so much that he bought out the interest of the other people in the property to keep it as a speedway and held those racers reunion events down there. Tim Thornton is just a wonderful, wonderful guy, great family, cool thing. So I'm, you know, I hope he's still involved with that and hope that comes to fruition for his sake, because he went out on a limb to give up the money they could make, you know, developing that for business development to keep the track. It was a Corinthian type of idea, Bobby, now that I'm learning the meaning of the word. Don't you agree? That was rather Corinthian of him, wasn't it?
That was totally Corinthian.
Corinthians,
we are above money.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're above money.
Yeah, it's not about the money for us.
It's not about the money.
It's the difference between givers and takers, man. We're givers, us Corinthians.
That's right, us Corinthians.
Yeah. Middle Georgia Raceway operated
NASCAR is not Corinthian.
For several years and had a lot of big races.
Yeah.
Not only cup races, but they had all pro races and, you know,
Other things. Did have some cup races when the track opened.
Yeah, I said that. Not only cup races, other races also.
Was that Jeffco also?
No.
There was a track called Jeffco.
Jeffco is in North Georgia. It's in Jefferson, Georgia.
That was the Gresham Speedway Gresham that you might have seen recently.
Jeffco morphed into Gresham.
Driving a race car around Middle Georgia is phenomenal. It is so freaking wide.
Yep.
I mean, that track was just, it was beautifully laid out. I mean, the transition from the straightaways, which are banked, into the turns and coming off of the turns. And And what I actually got to drive around it was not a full-blown race car. It was a brand-new Camaro that the Chevy dealer left there overnight.
So you took a hot lap.
Hey, any several. Car that's not yours is a race car.
Several. But it ran really well. And but we had to dodge. We knew where the roots were and that kind of stuff. And we didn't want to cut tires and tear up a brand-new Chevy. But we did have a golf cart race down there in the middle of the night. Had a big campfire going. We're eating s'mores and having a good time. There may have been some alcoholic beverages involved.
I bet there was some alcohol.
I'm sure there was.
But we had a bunch of golf carts out there, and it was pitch dark. Okay, and we decided to have a golf cart race on that half mile track. You can imagine how that went.
Yeah.
The next morning, I didn't want to be the guy when they came to pick up the golf carts.
Trying to explain it.
Yeah. It was tough, man. Cody just got dumped by Skype. You back, Cody? Oh, well.
I want to leave y'all with a parting thought to ponder.
Ponder.
It doesn't have a right or wrong answer. It's a pondering thought. I remember reading years, I don't even know when this decade this was, but I remember reading that the Southern 500, I remember this quote, the Southern 500 grew out of the Kentucky Derby. And I thought, I was a kid reading this, I thought, man, I bet the Kentucky Derby's a hell of an auto race if the Southern 500 grew out of that. Huh. I mean, seriously, I thought it was a car race.
Huh.
So anyway, the point is that auto racing did evolve to an extent from horse racing.
Absolutely.
Because they used the same tracks, same tracks at fairgrounds, which was typically a half-mile dirt oval.
Including the old Coastal Speedway here in Myrtle Beach. That was a horse track, Washington Park.
That was, and that happened countless places across America, that fairgrounds horse tracks became auto tracks.
Jack?
Yes?
One day when you're working into something, the Columbia Fairgrounds had a horse track around it.
Yes.
Back in the early 50s, and my Uncle Bobby and I went to a stock car race on that track probably in 1954, 1955. And you're going to hear people tell you that never happened, but I ran into a guy several months ago that's well into his 80s that was also at that race.
Cool. And, you know, I asked you about that a couple of years ago if they ever raced there. And I think I found some stuff in the late 40s when they had some races there. But
well,
I never could find any stock car races.
So
well, there was a stock car race there, and it was in the early 50s.
And I remember seeing, even when I was going to Carolina in the 60s, late 60s, the track was still there. I mean, the
horse track?
The horse track was still there. They didn't use it, but it was there.
But my point is the classic oval, which we know where it come from. It come from horse racing. Is that the most optimal shape of a track for car racing? And I'm going to go on record and say it is not. It is what's always been done, but always being done don't make it right.
Because most of them evolved from horse tracks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, an oval is fine for a horse, but cars tend to, on the exit of turns 2 and turns 4, have problem because the radius sharpens up a lot.
And the transition, if they're banked at all, the transition
about,
is usually
I know
a tough
that
spot.
About half of the audience on Racers Reunion will tell you that the optimum shape for a racetrack for cars is straight.
You're right, half would.
Well, I think we have got it almost half right with the addition of a dog leg on. I think the optimum might be dog legs on both straightaways.
Yeah, so it would actually have 6 turns. Yeah.
Right, so you wouldn't have that sharp transition exiting, and you would also have an easy transition into a turn if you had a dog leg on the front and the back stretch.
Of course, you could do it like the old Langhorne Speedway.
Just make it round.
It was a circle.
Just make it round. Yeah.
Well, I think there needs to be some straightaway.
So let's ponder that.
Yeah, ponder that.
Bristol's almost that.
I'm going to ponder that.
Rockingham was like that on the front stretch.
Coming off of Rockingham, coming off of turn
man, that
would
have been an odd wreck.
That thing right there, man, that's abrupt.
Yeah, you know? And think of the wrecks over the years exiting turn. Well, even at Daytona, coming off the second turn.
Yeah, but all these tracks were built early, many years ago.
Exactly.
When cars were a lot slower than they are today.
That's exactly right. And we keep building ovals.
Yeah.
Yep. They were slower, and they had suspensions. Yep. And nowadays, there are hardly any suspension at all, which makes that transition.
All right,
even
speaking
more
of
severe.
Suspension, I'm suspending this show.
What? What?
Good night, everybody. What? We love you. We mean it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to everybody that contributed to this show. We love it. Thanks so much again and again. Thanks to all your fans that let us be part of your Tuesday night. We appreciate that so much, and as we always do, we want to say a special thanks to the men and women that serve in our military. Thank you very much for doing what you do so that we can do this. To each and every one of you, good night, and God bless you.
He was a hard-living, hard-driving, damn old man, hauling moonshine whiskey for the bootleggers then.